Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome this episode, this special episode.
Hello.
Special because stuff's gone on.
Yeah.
Stuff's gone on.
We like to call it a special episode as if it's like a bonus. It's actually just a weekly one. It's just special because Sarri's been relegated, isn't it?
Oh, don't spoil it, mate. Don't spoil it. Before we get into it, a little bit of admin. Flats and I.
Ladmin. Bit of dadmin.
Flats and I. Oh. Dad bod.
I have.
Not me.
I used to have a dad bod, but I was a pro.
I got a lad bod. The 8th of February, Flats and I are going to be in Scotland for the Calcutta Cup. We're going to be doing a live show.
Oh, yeah.
Early on before the game, so won't spoil any of your pre-match hospitality, drinks, anything you've got going on.
It's like a breakfast time event, isn't it?
It's going to be around that time, yeah. Brunch, maybe. So stay tuned to our Twitter account, to Facebook. We're going to announce where that's going to be, ticket sales. We'll have a special guest, as always.
And be quick, because tickets go really fast. And that's partly to do with the fact that we're incredibly popular, and also to do with the fact we never have it in rooms that can seat more than 12 people, just so we can always say we sell out.
And you have a massive extended family as well, who love coming to the events.
Yeah, I've got a Maidstone crew. There's 46 of them coming up.
So. We're also going to be in Flatiron Square on the 19th of February in the evening. We will have someone absolutely awesome with us.
Awesome.
Yeah. Mm. To be confirmed. We got one in the pipeline, but we can't quite announce him or her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep you waiting. Tease you.
Yeah, and it's a funny one, isn't it? Because we had one that we thought of, we thought would be really good, but because it is an event put on by a drinks company, an alcohol brand, who encourage responsible drinking, we couldn't have him on because it was a he, has been very publicly done for drink driving.
Have you guessed it?
It's not Mike Tindall.
So anyway, basically, stay tuned.
Been done twice.
Stay tuned for all information. That will be released, and you'll be able to purchase tickets, and we'll let you know who's coming along.
Hey, presumably, Tins is one step closer to the throne, isn't he? No?
Mate, he's right up there, especially after they denouncing?
Oh, they're not abdicating the throne. Is it denouncing? No, denouncing slagging something off, isn't it? They're walking away, relinquishing royal titles and duties.
Yes, can't believe it. To live a nomadic life in Canada.
Do you know what? I know we shouldn't get involved and people are really all over it. Do you know what? Do you know what's really annoyed me about, I think it's disgraceful about Harry and Meghan, and I mean this, the fact that they have decided to have a life that actually makes them happy and to go away and disappear from the public eye. I think it's an absolute disgrace. I think they owe us. Why should they be happy and have privacy? Why should they?
I knew you were going to have an opinion on it soon.
No, I'm joking. Do you know what? I'm actually not asked. Do what you want.
I'm sort of thinking that maybe Harry and Meghan will go out and live a life like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Commando.
But
instead of Arnie having a daughter, he's got a wife. And
yeah, I like that.
He's got a big shed at the end of the garden with loads of weapons, maybe like some of the crown jewels.
Yeah, it's...
chain mail.
It's one of those things that it's 2020, so a bit like the salary cap thing. It's almost like one is now obliged to take an extreme position on it. And you don't have to, actually. You're allowed to be in the middle and say, oh, I hope they're really happy. I don't seem to have hurt anyone. And I think it would take... I mean, there's people like, you know, there are horrible people in the media and there are nice people in the media, just like there are in real life. But I think it would take quite... It would take somebody with... I don't know. To quite a special person to deny that Meghan has been treated horrifically in the press when compared with Kate Middleton. And it's I think it is not easy for either of them. But I think, God, who on earth, what young mum recently married and in love, who would want that as their life? Oh, my God. I could think of things that are worse, but I think it would be genuinely awful to be a prominent royal in that situation. Harry and Meghan, I would hate that. This couldn't be arsed. Like... Just walked into Costa and...
Someone stopped you.
Walked into Costa in blimmin' Seven Bridge Services. And someone said, where's Shanks? I said, I got him in the boot out there. And he laughed. Little did they know you were actually getting something out of your boot. I looked out the window and he laughed. I said, no, there he is in the boot now. That is him. I said, yeah, correct. He's in the boot.
Just putting the body in there.
Yeah. Anyways, he goes, I'll come and you're doing the podcast. Yeah, I'll come and join in. I said, I don't. I said, come if you want, but you won't make it out the car again. Don't come anywhere near us.
There's no room in the back either.
I just said, you're not welcome, mate. You're not my friend. You're not welcome.
I wonder if it's French speaking Canada as well. I always wonder that when people say they're off to Canada. Because they speak French.
Montreal, though. Beautiful. Wicked place.
Never been.
To the kids out there, wicked place.
I always wanted to go to Whistler after watching Being the Ultimate Movie and seeing the photo of Whistler's mother.
There's a bloke in this car park doing something British, right? He's spraying something all over his car and wiping the inside of his car down. Now, he's either a murderer.
Smoker.
He's getting rid of DNA. Or he's doing that thing. I think it's Febreze. I mean, there are other brands available. I could be wrong, so don't sue me.
Febreze does not get rid of DNA, mate.
No. But what, I don't think he's a killer. He's pretty open if he is. But Febreze, it's like, isn't it like mask smells? Mask things with this spray. Like, why don't you actually clean it instead? Why don't you, your sofa stinks, does it? Spray this on it, makes it smell better. No, because all the dirt that's making it smell is underneath this spray now. Why don't you just take the covers off or clean it?
Say the same about you and deodorant though, mate. Just masking a smell there. Yeah. Just wash your arms properly.
I can't because my shoulder surgery. Do you know what? There are days when I really struggle.
Right, we are digressing massively now. Right, let's pull this back. Admin done. Actually, well done to Lee Westwood for winning the Abu Dhabi Classic.
Yeah, love it.
Tears the lot.
Beautiful. Well done, that
brilliant.
Man.
What a shot in as well. He could putt at the weekend. That was a massive difference. If he could putt like that through all the major tournaments, he'd have a shed load of major wins.
Good on him. Beautiful.
What a shot in with his rescue into the 18th, though. Beautiful. Good beautiful. So well done. Well done, Lee.
Nice fella.
Never met him, mate. Actually,
met him loads of times.
Met him at the Green Room. Cheltenham last year.
Loads of times. Same as you, I've met him.
Yeah, he can squat like something like 200, or deadlift 200 kg.
Is that true?
It's decent for a golfer, yeah.
Well, it's decent for a civvy, isn't it? I mean, in physical terms, he's a civvy.
And also,
he's good at golf, but he's
and also, did you watch SAS?
No, don't. I'm watching it tonight, don't.
Okay, I'm not spoiling this for you because you know what happens, but you know the mole in the camp, Jay?
Yeah.
Okay, he's revealed.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, he just looks like James Bond when he comes out with like a black zip-up top and immaculate beard. The beard's got a bit of glow in it, like that. Ooh.
You would. Yeah, okay.
You know, you're wasted in the SAS. You should be a spy. You should be seducing lovers for information.
Oh, do you know what I found out this weekend?
Using your watch to unzip the dress at the back.
I've forgotten that. That's a good one. I was with Scott's bedding this weekend. And
big lump?
Yeah, real good. I mean, I say this about everyone, so it means nothing anymore. But actually, really good company. We had a good time. We were together a couple of nights and a couple of days in France. Anyway, so... And he's mates with Nicka Benden from Clermont, so we're all bezies. And I was talking to him about Bernard Leroux, the South African French lock back row guy who got the yellow for racing the day against Saris. And I said, I was in Oita that night, you were doing drinking games and everything. Oh. And he walked in to the bar, some of the French lads walked in. I think I might have said this the other day.
Probably did.
Maybe I did. And I was like, that guy is...
And yeah,
I was
he did.
Like, yeah, and I speaking to Scott Spedding, and I was like, so he's married. I'm glad he's married because it means he's off the market. And he was like, yeah. And to be honest, mate, he's a hell of a unit, great looking guy, happily married. I was like, yeah, but he's not basically, Scott wouldn't say it, but I think he's maybe not the most charismatic individual out there. So Scott wouldn't quite say it, but it's just another. Is another black mark against Bernard Leroux, which means he's less of a threat on the open market.
Gotcha. So top trumps, you know, weakness, charisma.
Yep.
Yep. Well, that is probably one of my strengths.
Weakness, married.
Weakness, hair.
Yeah, his hair's amazing. Like, we're in the car here, guys. I'm not going to put the engine on, Shanks, but I am putting the engine on. I just need it to be colder in here, mate.
Okay, no problem.
I'm a big fella. So I got into Shanks' car. I put it on Insta later, and it's basically his screen's on in the front of his car, and it's just podcast. Just says serial killers. amazing.
Yeah.
So predictable.
No, it's I like
right.
I like the chase.
Right. look, we could spend the next 3 hours talking about the salary cap stuff. Now everyone's talking about it. It's one of those things, Tommy, that because it's 2020, it is people feel, I think, obliged. Maybe it was always this way, but people feel obliged, I think, to take a really extreme position on it. And there are some people sitting in the middle, but I think too few. Not in the middle, like, don't really mind, but just trying to achieve a bit of balance, really. I understand that fans of other clubs are very resentful. I understand that Sarri's fans are, some of them are very upset. Some of them are getting over it because it's just a bit of fun for them watching the rugby, and some of them are strongly in denial. And these are all sort of predictable states, I guess. But I think that the whole Shaden Freuder thing is very real. But it's probably because we're ex-Sarries or something. I actually don't think it is. I think if Northampton were found guilty of having cheated a lot over the last few years, I still don't think my heart rate would change too much. I think you just deal with it, talk about it, learn a bit, offer some opinion when you're asked and when you have a podcast. But people seem to be reacting in very extreme ways about this on social media and all kind of stuff. And while that's predictable, I don't think it helps. I also don't think it's particularly endearing.
The strange thing is, Dave, is that, right, they've been done for cheating. That's what's happened, okay? Found guilty for cheating, for breaching salary cap. Now, it's a team sport, okay? Individually, when you look at some of the greatest cheats in the world, so Ben Johnson, you know, taking steroids, winning the 100 metres in the Olympics. He is an individual. When it's a team, and I suppose what's gone on is the infringement has come from the top level, the director level, really. This is why it's difficult, because, you know, you don't hate the players, or, you know, you don't hate the fans, the staff, but when it's done at that top level, it's very difficult, because it sort of tarnishes the whole of the team. And yeah, it's not the flight, it's not the player's fault. And now some players might have gone there knowing that it was a risk that they're doing. And I still really want to see the report by Lord Dyson, as in what Saracens and Nigel Ray specifically have said he's invested in. Whether they are actually companies that property companies. It could be buying a trade. It could be coffee. It could be anything. It could be sportswear. We've not seen that. And that's what's deemed to be not an investment, but it's deemed to be wage, isn't it?
So, by the way, Brad Barrett's coffee company, it's nothing to do with Saracens.
No, exactly that. I was just racking my brain then for something, and it just popped in.
Nothing to do with that.
Done, mate. You know, they've actually, Brad Barrett's Tiki Tonga have been suppliers now for Spurs as well, which is great news.
Mm. Jim Hamilton spoke to me off the record, and I said, is it actually nice coffee? He's like, the worst thing about it is...
It is.
It's really nice. Oh. He goes, killer, because what you really want to do is you want to help him out, but, you know, you don't want anyone doing that well.
No.
He didn't say it that aggressively, but he was basically gutted that it was really good. That's who he is, really.
You know, it's not the squad, it's not the coaches, it's done top level, so it's very difficult to hate the entire, for me, it's very difficult to have an issue with the entire organisation of Saracens. It's just a couple of people, top level, directors, CEO, whoever is involved, that have been wrongly advised, because it's been going on for a long time now. A lot. I think that's the most... 5 years, say, they've been breached the salary cap. How has it not been... How's it not come out earlier?
I think it's because it wasn't robustly investigated is why. That's why. You can talk about investigating it all you want, but Laura Scott, who's now at the BBC, originally she's the one who properly got into it, and kudos to her, because she did a great job, and she did what, effectively, let's be completely frank about it, and they are colleagues and friends and actually occasionally employers of ours, but it's what the governing body couldn't and didn't do.
But they talked about it in 2015, didn't they?
Well, yeah, but it's one of those things. We as supporters, we are perennially in the dark here. We are in the dark, which just makes the fire rage, actually. And it's easy to say, give us all the information, but again, we're saying there must be laws which give, you know, these governing bodies or the clubs permission to keep this information from us. We don't know if there are laws. We don't know, for example, what regulation it is that sent Sarri's down. We don't know. So the communication is, there's very little of it, and there may well be good reason for that, but we don't know if there's good reason for that. So, you know, I am very inexperienced in comms, but I was comms director at Bath for a couple of years, but I remember being in certain situations and meetings, so we just cannot say anything about this. And I said, right, we need to tell people that we can't say anything and say, guys, we would love to fill you in, but for this reason and this reason, we're actually not allowed. So as soon as we're allowed, we'll tell you, but we're not just being obstinate. And it was, no, no, just say nothing was often the reply. It wasn't always the reply. It was, why can't we just tell people why we're so quiet? It's, you know, I don't understand. It's, anyway, it's, you know, if you're trying to buy a house and the estate agent says, I'll call you before close of play Friday, and they call on Tuesday and say, well, there's nothing to tell you over the weekend. You're sitting there thinking about it all weekend.
Why didn't you just
ring
that?
Me on the Friday and say, just so you know, I haven't heard back from them yet, but we're on it. You know, it just, anyway, it's it feels like basic comms, but we don't know if there's a reason for relative silence or not. But it wasn't robustly interrogated before and investigated before. I think that's the reason. But also it was, you effectively, you know, put under the brush under the carpet in 2015, but Sarri's went on spending.
That's the biggest thing, is why though? I think Prem Rugby have to have a really good look at themselves in this, because it's been going on for such a long time, and because Saracens have say been getting away with it, or they found a loophole. You know, more players have been coming to the club, more players have been, well, I'm guessing now, but I'm pretty sure it'll be a pretty good guess that they're getting paid both through PAYE and also through their limited company. So they're sharing their wage, which you're not allowed to. You know, it has to come under the £7 million mark. So for them to go on, you know, Saracens got themselves in a right mess now where they've been relegated. But
right old pickle.
But it didn't need to happen, really, did it? You know, they should have been investigated earlier.
Yeah, but what people, I think, you know, we like to direct our emotions somewhere, and there are probably lots of people here who have done things wrong. So you might say that, well, we all had suspicions years ago, and let's just be completely frank, there's no proof, this is just that we all had suspicions before, you know, the first year that Lord Dyson has deemed that Saracens cheated. We've had suspicions for quite a long time.
Yes.
Right? So not just about Saracens, but has to be said, primarily about Saracens. There were lots of people talking about Bath as well, because they were spending a lot of money. Let's just be frank, everyone knows that. So, but in terms, we had suspicions before that. So is it also kind of our fault for not saying something in 20 whatever or 7 years ago? Is it our fault for not bringing it up and putting pressure on?
People have.
They have. It's been suspicions. But there's little pockets of blame everywhere, which is normal. And we all feel it. But I think it's one of those things that, you know, could the salary cap manager, I forget his name now, apologies, could he have done better? Well, yeah, because actually it seems that he wasn't the one who actually found out. It took a journalist to come in and do the job. Yeah. Then could PRL have communicated better? Yeah. Yeah, they could. But actually, what we're talking about here, the main fault here, it's not that no one else is to blame for anything, the main sort of, I don't want to call it a crime, misdemeanor here, whatever it is the cheating. It is the cheating.
Yeah.
That is the thing. So it's almost like, right, let's batter PRL. Let's batter Premiership Rugby. Well, okay, they probably could have done things better. I bet you they wouldn't deny that. I bet you they wouldn't. I don't know, but I bet they wouldn't. But actually, it's this weird thing. I remember when Matt Stevens got failed a drugs test at Bath and got a 2-year ban, found cocaine in his system, whatever it was. And it was like, I remember because I'm his friend and I love him, saying, feeling really sorry for him because, you know, what he's doing is illegal and you could argue stupid or he had a problem, whatever. It's certainly not performance enhancing. So what he wasn't doing was cheating. Like, he was literally making himself less healthy as a pro.
Yeah.
But it was amazing the amount of blame that was levelled at our coaches and levelled at us lot as senior players. You let this happen. As I tell you now, I've never seen anyone do cocaine in my life, I said to one of the journalists. I've never seen it. I've seen it on telly. I have never seen it. I have never seen cocaine in front of them. I've never seen it. Yet there are people, they were angry at a press conference blaming us. It was probably because Matt wasn't there and they needed somebody to blame. But it's like, yeah, could we have done more? Yeah, we probably could actually. So yeah, we'll accept that. But it's not the main crime here. It's the main thing, I get it, but the main thing here is
we could have avoided this situation where they are getting relegated. The club could just go to pot, you know, it could just dissolve down the leagues. What I think is annoying for me is that this could have been dealt with a lot earlier, because there were rumours out there. You talk about, is it down to us? It's not down to us, because the rumours were out there. All the DORs were saying, how the poison the question is, how can Saracens afford all these quality players? And Saracens were just going on and on and getting away with it. Look, they are, there's no doubt they are to blame for this. They've gone over the salary cap. They've spent too much, thinking that they could get away with it, thinking there was a loophole, when we found out now there is no loophole. And I mean, they had the choice, didn't they, of either opening up their books for, say, a forensic auditor to come in, or getting relegated. This is what we've been told by Tony Rowe.
If that's not true, he'd be getting sued by now.
Yes, of course.
Right. So let us assume that is true. I think it is. I mean, there's a ton of stuff here, isn't there? Lord Dyson has come out and said he thinks it's absolutely wrong that the report hasn't been made public.
Yep.
I'm not legally qualified, but I absolutely agree, because it will create some speculation in the short term, but in the medium and long term, I feel like it's absolutely the right thing to do. We're completely in the dark, aren't we? So yep. We assume that there is a mechanism by which Saracens can stop that being made public, because surely there is no one else who wouldn't want that made public. And you start to wonder, because of how little we're told, whether Premiership Rugby don't want it to be public because it makes them look bad or incompetent or something.
Yep.
But what happens, there is a salary cap manager, yet it took a journalist, an independent journalist, working on her laptop around her full-time job to actually do the job that this was meant to be done internally. So the governance of this stuff has to change and will change. I think there's no doubt that it will change. It absolutely has to. So sport governing itself just doesn't work. And this is the best example ever of that, probably in world sport or close to it. So we need to see the report. We need to, the Saracens choosing, I feel like the most astonishing thing in all of this is that, and again, it's all speculation, but almost all of what everyone is saying is speculation, because we don't know anything. No one's told us anything, really. So all we know is sanctions. So the most astonishing thing of all is that, going to go out on a limb, the greatest club side ever has chosen, or one of the greatest club sides ever certainly, has chosen to be relegated to effectively Div 2 as reigning champions, rather than show people how they were paying their players.
And it just... probably, for me, that says either they've been way, way over that 7 million salary cap, or they're too embarrassed, really, to show their figures as to what's gone on there financially. And also, if they do get relegated to Division 1, the Championship, then they can't come back up for 2 years, because prior to getting promoted, you have to go through that league 2 years under the salary cap to show that you can do it. So it's going to take 2 years for them to come back up to the Premiership.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then it's whether or not players want to stay with the club that they love and the culture they've built. But that's going to really hinder any chances they've got of playing internationally, of playing for the Lions, because you need to test yourself, don't you? You need those big European games, those big club games, to get you up to a level of fitness, mentally prepare yourself as well for internationals, because, you want to be playing top flight rugby leaning into autumn campaigns, into Six Nations campaigns, so you're ready physically and mentally, and that you're not going to get that in the Championship at all.
I honestly reckon that Eddie Jones, Warren Gatland, you might disagree with this, just won't mind that much, a load of the top players having an easy year, because...
But where are they going to get quality games? That's the only thing.
I think they're not, respectfully to Championship, they're not. But no. I think that, this season they can just... it's a really interesting one, but then I wonder, maybe you might see a couple of guys going on loan to a club for a season.
Yeah.
A couple of seasons. So you might find Owen Farrell playing 10... I can't see it. I actually think a lot of the top players are going to stay, and I think some players will accept pay cuts. But it's not beyond to see Owen Farrell playing one or two league games leading into the Champions Cup, playing the Champions Cup for Sale Sharks, but not playing a whole season because Sale cover half his wages, Sarries cover the other half, and that takes 300, 325 grand or whatever it is off the cap. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some little mechanisms like that. I think more players than you think are going to stay, the top players. I think it is the middle. The young, cheap players, they don't really, not don't count, but it's, I think it's the middle players that will probably get squeezed financially. This is just guessing, just guesswork. But I don't think we, I could be wrong, I don't think we'll see a mass exodus.
It's 2 years though as well. It's not just,
one,
it's not
I didn't
like,
know that.
It's not like you can just float down and then come straight back up like Quinn's did.
Yeah.
Like a lot of teams have done. You have to show that you are within the salary cap for 2 years in that league before you can get promoted to the Gallery. Now, whether that changes or not, I don't know. But
so because they've been in breach, is that? Because everyone else who's gone down for one season and come straight back up?
Yeah, because they've been in breach.
Right, okay.
So for 2 years,
you have to show. One for me, that. I mean, we're going to say some stuff on this pod, and we're going to have people letting us know that we've made a couple of mistakes here and there. And I'm not saying that's one of them for a second, but that's fine. We're gonna make mistakes because we don't quite know everything. But we know we've read as much as we can, listened as much as we can. So we don't know what law saw them relegated. We think it is a straight choice between show us exactly how you paid people the last few years.
I've got it here, mate. Under current regulations, a club getting promotion to Premiership Rugby, must have complied with Premiership salary cap regulations for 2 seasons.
A club gaining promotion to Premiership Rugby must have complied with
Premiership salary.
Yeah, so I guess everyone else has been relegated, was compliant.
Yeah.
They just got relegated.
Yep.
Okay, that's interesting. And I would bet my the 30 quid in my pocket that changes. They won't be there for 2 years. I'd be amazed. But it's, yeah, so we also, so you know, in a sense you feel, you can feel sympathy. I feel sympathy for Sarries. You know, there are great people there. We're good mates with Kevin Sorrell. We love the guy. Al Sarnason, wonderful bloke. Josh, these are great people. The players, loads of these guys are properly great people. And so this is just, we're trying to talk frankly, sort of, I guess, in sort of business black and white about it, or black and red. But so we do feel sympathy. And you could, I think, feel sympathy for the fact that, you know, in early November, they were told, this is what's happened. You're in breach. You've got to make some changes. And then already they've been told, not quick enough, relegated. And you think, well, if Tony Rowe's right, and got no reason to doubt him, right, it's open your books to everyone, or for a forensic audit, or be relegated. Now, what law gives the other clubs or Premiership Rugby, whatever, the right to do that? We don't know. There must be one because it's happened, but we don't know. We just don't know these things because we haven't been told. The other thing, there's a few things that.
That's why the report is so key.
I mean, it's kind of everything. But we're not. I suppose we're going to see it now because they've chosen relegation. So they can't change their mind and say, actually, go on, show everyone and we'll stay up. I mean, that's not going to happen now. You know, but I. So there's something out. There are a few things. And, you know, there are journalists. I love reading all the rugby writers. I think we've got some amazing rugby writers in the UK and sports writers. And I don't. You don't only read the ones you agree with. I quite like reading the ones I don't agree with. And. Lots have been balanced, lots have just reported the bloody news, which is exactly what they do, and lots of people are very, there are a couple of really defensive Sarries. People get super worked up about that. I think, well, that's their opinion, they're paid to give it, they're selling newspapers. Bloody great if more people are buying the paper.
And I don't agree with a lot of people that say the players knew, because no one really discusses, no one actually ever discusses what they're on.
Got a question for you.
And how they're getting paid. Maybe with, if you're super close to someone at the squad, you might say, look, I've been offered this deal, this is what they're offering me, what do you think? And you sort of confide in someone, but no one is open about how much they earn and how that is divided between, I don't know, your limited company, your wage, your pension, anything like that.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. Yep. So firstly, you're right, like, salaries more often now are published in the paper. I know from a couple of players, because I've ribbed them about it, and they've said, I promise you that is inaccurate.
One, yep.
I won't say who because it's not fair, but somebody I was printed to have quite a big salary at a club other than Sarries, and it wasn't Bath either. And I joked about it at dinner, and afterwards he said, mate, I promise you it's not accurate. I'm on more than that. We laughed. He said, I'm on more than that, kid. I wouldn't have signed for that. That's what I was on last year kind of thing.
Yeah,
so these things are often inaccurate, but of course,
what's your question?
It's all we know. The question is, you're right, players do not talk about salary. I don't know, what any of my teammates earned in the 14, 15 years, whatever, I was a pro. I don't know for a fact what any of my teammates earned, not one. And that's because you just don't talk about it. And I remember, I could be wrong, but I remember quite clearly it being in a contract, in our contract, saying you do not discuss remuneration with other players.
Okay.
Because it can create real problems.
Yeah.
So, no, just no one spoke about it. And the people who are the people who are loose-lipped are the agents that tell everyone.
Yep.
They're the people who are loose-lipped.
Agreed.
Never. It's very, very rarely the players. Do you not think... Now, do you, in terms of saying it's not the players' fault,
yep.
I want to get one thing out. I'm going to get to my question in a second.
Okay.
One thing I want to get absolutely out there. If I'm being offered 150 grand to play somewhere that I don't really want to play and not a club that isn't winning trophies, and then Saracens come in and offer me 250 grand
yeah.
to be go and be first choice or second, whatever it is, there, and I go there and say, we'll give you 250, and I say, well, I'm going to need 275, and they say, fine.
Okay.
I am signing as soon as I can get a pen in my hand.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
That's the reality of it, and you can judge me or judge rugby players on that all you want. What I'm not doing is saying, right, I want to see your books. I want to see how you pay players. I want to see your arrangement for Owen Farrell's contract. I want to see your arrangement for Vincent Cox's contract, whatever. Firstly, players don't do that. Secondly, if I ever ask that of a club, they'll tell you where to go. No, we're not showing you that. It's none of your business. I'm not allowed to see what other players earn. It's none of your business. Do you want to come or not? That you might listen to this and think that's ridiculous. That's how it works, right? So I don't blame the players for taking good contracts. I don't. However, do you not think these are loads of these lads are really bright, right? They're really, really bright. They're aware individuals. Do you not think they've sat around sometimes in their squad room over lunch or after a couple of beers in the pub and thought, isn't it a bit odd that we've got twice as many top of the range players as everyone else? Yes, we've got a great academy, but don't you think it's a bit odd? Because there are lots of players there that the academy didn't produce.
The one that did it for me was Elliot Daly when he signed, because you've got Alex Good, you've got Liam Williams,
Max Malins.
Yeah, but you've now got Elliot Daly comes. The three who I would class world class 15s, which just seems odd. Now, I agree with you that you might be thinking, wow, we've got so many quality players here. How are we affording it? But like anything, when you're paid a lot of money, you look for ways to pay less tax, legal ways to pay less tax, so
to be efficient.
To be efficient, yeah, with your money. To make sure that you're paying the right amount, but also trying to get as much money as you can, really, in your pocket. So, but this is my point, Flash, is because it went on for 5 years, you sort of trust a system that is working for Saracens. You trust that, yeah, this is a loophole that works. Yes, there's nothing that anyone can do about it because it's legal. We've just found a super efficient way in which we can get paid. So for 5 years, this has gone on. So when you are attracting new players, I think, yeah, great, actually. We can do it. I can get paid more legally and nothing's going to happen. So this is why it's difficult. Yeah, you're right, though. If you're going to get offered 100 or 125 grand more than you're getting offered another club, I'm sure it's not as much as that, but you're certainly going to get offered more. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're going to get offered the same amount or maybe a little bit less, but you're going to a club that's winning, six or seven trophies, haven't they? They've won since 2015.
But we were told, the rumours went round and we repeated them here saying this is what we've heard. It was kind of went round that Elliot Daly had signed for Wasps, for Saris from Wasps, and taken a pay cut.
Yes.
He wanted to be part of a winning team.
Yes.
Then Big Lol on the Ruck podcast I love, Times One, he said that's not true. We couldn't afford to keep him. So you're not. It's an odd one. So
this is why you need. This is why we need to see what Saracen's books have said or saying. We need to see the report because this is someone's word against another's here.
It is,
isn't it?
But ultimately the people that have seen it, so the brightest legal minds in the country have said. They're the people who actually have seen it have said this is cheating, and that's the way it is. So you can sort of defend that all you want. So it's the whole buying houses thing, and I, complete openness. I mean, no one ever offered to buy me a house at Saris. If they had, I'd have bitten their arm off because I lived in London.
Gave you a green Mondeo though.
Gave a green Mondeo, which yeah, it didn't go very well. I think Matt Leek knocked the wheel hubs off mine on a roundabout. Anyway, so it wasn't in great nick when I gave it back that Monday. Apologies for that. But I remember when I worked at Bath after I'd stopped playing, I remember saying to some guys around the club, you know, the management, saying, we should be doing that. Bath's such an expensive, it's like, right, we can offer you 30 grand more than you earn at Saints. Yeah, but then I've got to buy a house in Bath and I'll get myself a 3-bed flat for what I can have a 5-bed house. So actually what Bath should be doing is, you know, why Bruce Craig's got a lot of money, why isn't he saying, I'll give you, go halves on a house? It's a brilliant idea. And they didn't do it. They said, no, I remember someone saying to me, that's dodgy ground, that benefit in kind stuff, leave it.
Yep.
And then I remember mentioning it, I had a chat with Tony Rowe on the sidelines once, and I said, I think it's a brilliant idea, that. And he said, you can't do that. He goes, they get paid enough, they can buy their own houses. You know, so it's one of those things that...
It's the ones that don't get paid enough, though, you know, like the middlemen.
Yeah, but the difficulty is, I'm a lad who's trying to get more money from a club. I'm a player.
Yep.
What I am not is senior management with the resources to take top of the range legal advice. The people that were in those positions still did these things, and it's
and they did it for 5 years.
And so what? So a couple of things, right, boy. There is a position that some have taken, which is I couldn't give a monkey's what position anyone takes, to be honest. Like, but you know, I know what mine is. But there's a position that some have taken that basically the relegation or the initial sanctions and now this are part of some anti-Saracens agenda by, I think, Nick Kane in the Rugby Paper. By the way, a journalist, he wouldn't know me if I walked in, but I've been reading his stuff for years. He's one of the greats, you know. My dad will often ring me and say, oh, have you read Nick Kane's stuff? He's very, very good. And I'll say, I agree. So yep. I think he's brilliant, but and a huge amount of respect for him. But the headline, I know he doesn't write the headlines, but the headline to his article recently was Vindictive Club Owners Take Their Pound of Flesh from Saris. And I can't square away in my mind, and this is someone who has a lot of affection for Nigel Ray, a huge amount of affection for his family. His kids are definitely friends of mine. You know, so this is, I'm just trying to be straight, is the position that Saracen's punishment is the result of an anti-Saracen's agenda from the other owners. When, how can you take that position while not also acknowledging that Saracen's proven financial cheating has been to the detriment of all the other clubs? Of course it has, because they became almost unbeatable, not quite, but hugely dominant, not just because of financial cheating, but absolutely that was part of it. They do lots of other stuff well. How can you not say that the Saracens' financial cheating was not effectively an anti-premiership agenda and an anti-all the other clubs agenda? I think what by other clubs going for Saris, I don't see how you can be wholly offended by other clubs going for Saris when it has now been proven they were cheating, but yet you're not offended by what Saracens have done, which has proved to be cheating. I don't understand how you can square away one agenda and not the other.
If you're a chairman of a rugby club, director of a rugby club, and you're year out, seeing Saris win the league, winning the Champions Cup, you're going to be fuming. You know, if you're complying within the salary cap and they're not, you know, they've monopolised the market. They've gone way above the 7 million. It's got to be massive, mate. It has to be massive. Otherwise, they would have opened their books. You're not talking about 1 mil or 2 mil. Maybe they've gone 3-4 times over the limit. So, of course, you're going to be absolutely disgusted with Saracens. And look, it's come out now. They've been banned from the Premiership next season. They're going down to, at the moment, they're going down to Division 1. What's it called? The Championship?
Champs.
The
Champy.
Look, it's that's the fine. That shows you how severe Saracens have been with the salary cap. You know, the 5.36 million they've been fined as well. On top of that as well, they probably get fined more. I agree, mate. If you're another club, a director at another club, chairman of another club, you would be absolutely fuming. What I will say is that surely, though, Saracens cannot be the only club that have gone over the salary cap. I find it very hard to believe that no other club has gone over the salary cap. Now, I know if you go over by a small amount, a certain amount, you are fined, but they can't be the only ones that have just dominated this market. And if I was at Saracens now, I would be demanding that every club in the Premiership also gets the same treatment. They also get reviewed on their salary cap for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Saracens are very likely in no position whatsoever to start making demands of anyone.
That's true.
You know, but I think, you know, again, it's all conjecture, it's all guesswork, but I would be very surprised if a good number of the other Premiership clubs haven't done things they shouldn't have done in the past. However, in 2015, when the whole inverted commas Sarries and Bath thing was kind of brushed under the carpet and let's all carry on and say no more about it, what I've been told as I've asked people around the place is that a lot of clubs tidied their affairs up, got their houses in order in 2015 around that point and said, we're all going to stop doing it. And then Sarries went, ploughed on and signed Elliot Daly and did all that stuff. And in the end, it's like, this is too much. We can't beat these people because of all the players they've got. Now, in the end, it just basically pissed everyone off so much because everyone had agreed to play fair and Sarries weren't playing fair is what I've been told. However, I think it's not for Sarries to demand that anyone else is investigated. But God, as a neutral, I absolutely want every club forensically audited, don't you? But I mean, I absolutely do, because wouldn't it be great to know that all the clubs are playing fair?
Yes.
It really, really would.
Well, here's something for you. Wouldn't you give Premiership Rugby your $7 million and they then distribute the funds? So they get $7 million and it's down to them then to pay players.
Yeah, but then it's, you're talking about, you know, a version of central contracting, and do they have any power over that money, or are they basically just doing online transactions when you tell them to? And then you've got, you might, I don't think there's the manpower there, frankly. I don't think there's enough people there, but I think you need a team in place to properly manage this, but to properly manage it.
Well, but you say, is there manpower, is there a team there? I'm not sure you can make that. I mean, it wouldn't be a huge amount of money, would it, to have a team of seven or eight who are in charge of the money, the whips, if you want.
Or you can imagine, you know, someone's on the market, right, give me an extra 20, I'll sign now. You got it in the budget. And you've got to ring up, you know, Gary at Premiership Rugby or Claire at Premiership Rugby, and she's skiing and she's back on Tuesday.
People are allowed holidays.
I don't think that'd work.
Maybe not. But I'm just trying to think of ways in which
the governance needs to change.
You can keep an eye on what's being spent and what's not being spent. What this will do, though, is properly frighten anyone that is absolutely thinking about, can we afford this player? Can we afford that player?
Yeah.
You know, potentially we might go over the $7 million. You know, I think everyone will think twice about what they're spending and make sure that they've got a clear account of their finances. You know, because this is, what is this, the biggest scandal that we've seen?
Oh yeah, by miles.
You know, forget Bloodgate, forget drug doping, anything like that. Betting.
This is way bigger.
This is massive, and hopefully something good will come of it.
Well, I think ultimately,
Rhys Curry come back to Wales.
There you go. Yeah, and Liam Williams and Rhys Curry coming back. But I think it is. It's firstly, it's hugely sad. Second, a couple of things that, and again, you know, these are just personal views, but it's our podcast. We can do what we like. The whole notion, I was in France that weekend and saw some Gloucester fans at the Toulouse game and they were lovely, and one of them said, what do you reckon about the Sarries thing? I said, oh God, we really got to do this, mate. I've been working for 2 days. I'm just going home now. And he said something really horrible about Nigel Ray.
Yeah.
And I said, now, Nigel's kind of a friend of mine. We don't have each other's mobile numbers or anything like that, but we're friendly.
Got each other's backs.
Got each other's, yeah, no, not really. But I think the whole, something I just absolutely cannot imagine in a million years, and I expect you might feel the same, is the idea of him sitting down and saying, right, how can we cheat? How can we get away with this? How can we cheat? How can we batter everyone unfairly? That, for me, doesn't fit. However, Rob Baxter made a brilliant point a little while ago, a brilliant point, and he speaks really saliently on it, I think, and really good to listen to on it, because he's such a straight bloke, you know.
Yeah.
You trust him with absolutely anything, Rob Baxter, and I think he makes a really good point. It's not always about, I think I'm paraphrasing here, and I might be misquoting him, I probably will, but it's not how can we cheat and smash all these other bastards unfairly. It's not injecting something into your veins which you know is going to make you better than you really are. It's not quite in the same. But if you are actively looking for ways around what everyone else has agreed is fair, if you're actively looking for ways around it,
yeah,
you're already on the way to doing, you know, to effective enough sort of financial doping. We are not, we're looking to maximise credits, do that, do everything fairly. And I don't know, I assume they have image rights contracts, these lads at, say, Chiefs or wherever it is. We'll do all the stuff we can, but absolutely within the framework. And we don't, we push it and we stop at the limit of, you know, the sort of agreement we've made. We stop at the end, we stop it. But if you're saying, right, how can we get past that? How can we do this? Can we buy a house? Can we have somebody paid from a geezer in,
yeah
I don't know, Joburg or New York or Paris? Can a mate of a mate pay you? Can you have two contracts, one with so-and-so and one with... Then actually, you are on the road. You are doing the same stuff. This is the same thing. And he's like, we don't look for ways... And I'm sure they'd be very open to be audited. After all they've said, they'd have to be. But they'd be very open to, you know, we don't do that. We do everything by the book. Just like he spoke about when Santiago Cordero, he didn't want to leave Chiefs. He loved it. They loved him. One of the best players in the league. And he said, we simply could not afford to keep him. And there are loads of players out of contract. Like, look at, guess, imagine how much, think of a player. Harry Williams' stock has grown. For me, he's right up there with Kyle Sinclair for me now. And he's a tight head. He battered Claremont at the week. Battered La Rochelle at the weekend. Luke Cowan-Dickie. These guys' respective values are soaring.
Top offloader.
And at some point, Rob, I remember Rob saying, at some point, we tell people we have no more money. So I'm afraid you're going to have to go or take less money. And he, I expect, feels that Saracens just don't have those conversations because it's, we will find a way to pay you enough to keep you.
Now, we've been chatting about this.
Not always, but often.
Yeah, for a while now. We're hoping that we can get Alex Lowe on the phone in a bit. But look, we're not defending Saracens. We're trying to be impartial on this. But it's difficult to hate the whole organisation when it's, you know, say three or four people at the top level that have been wrongly advised, they found a loophole. That is the problem. That's the issue that's gone on. And it's, you know, you're talking about people's livelihoods. You're talking about, you know, chefs of people that maintain the facilities, people that mow the grass, you know, all things like this. You know, it's not just the players and the management. It's everyone of the whole organization, which is absolutely massive. It's the academy. It's the lot. It's the name as well. So, you know, we're not defending what Saracens have done because, you know, they have cheated. They have gone way above the salary cap and they have been fined. But, you know, it's difficult because we don't hate the whole, we don't hate the players, we don't hate the management, we don't hate the coaches. It's, but they've been let down by directors at the top of the chain.
Yeah, and it's bloody sad. But I, you know, in terms of the people who aren't, you know, at the limelight, the backroom stuff, you know, this is where all Saracens, sort of what they've not spouted, the wrong word, all they've talked about, family, about looking after each other. I think I would be amazed if there are suddenly 30 people behind the scenes sacked because of what's happened. Sorry, can't afford to keep you, go. I honestly believe that Saracens believe everything they say. So I think they do take care of each other. They do love each other. Now, that doesn't mean they haven't been cheating. I do believe those things because I've seen them in action and not just on game days. However, I think people will be looked after. However, it's reputational. And there are some people who are saying, well, it hasn't done any damage to reputation, hasn't tainted any of their titles. I steadfastly disagree with that. And I think I'd find it unusual if someone's been proven to have cheated in the years where they've won titles. I don't see how it cannot be tainted. I don't see how.
When you say, you know, they'll still get looked after, that, will they though? Because they're not going to be demanding. They're not going to have the same money coming in. They might not have the same ticket sales, the same sponsors. All of this that is put in a pot which pays players, which pays all the staff, you know, all of a sudden they could be potentially without that because who sponsors Saracens? Allianz. You know, are they going to continue their sponsorship? You know, it's not great PR for them, is it? Sponsoring.
A lot of coverage, mind.
A lot of coverage, yeah, but it's negative coverage, mate. You know, it's not, I know all PR is good PR, but so there are a lot of what ifs. It'd be great, you know, if nothing changes for Saracens and everyone maintains their job, but it's going to cost Nigel Ray a lot of money, more than he's already forked out in fines.
I hope. I hope he was looked after. But I think reputationally, it's a huge thing, and you know, just it's the other another thing. I understand. You know, when comparing it with Lance Armstrong is silly, really. But
you can't really,
not really. But I remember one thing. I remember is when I've read David Walsh's stuff and I've watched documentaries, and we all did. We all read loads of stuff. Is that he was so aggressive in his defence whenever he was accused that it kind of made it worse when he was found guilty, that aggressive, and Saracens weren't abusive to anybody, but they were aggressively in denial that they were cheating. And then it's found that they had. And I find that hard to square away. I find that, you know, not that hard. I'll get over it, but I understand the player's standpoint and the coach's standpoint, because they probably don't quite know what's gone on financially. However, when you have players that I respect hugely, and we all do, saying, you know, we've gone down there and we're sticking it to them at the moment. It's almost like sticking up two fingers at all our critics, and all the criticism is misplaced and we're ramming it down their throats at the moment. It's like, no, it's like when the initial judgment was handed out, and we've probably done this before, but on the pod, and the initial judgment handed out after the World Cup, Sarries go down with what is effectively a second team and beat Gloucester at Kingsholm. It's like, wow, what a show of defiance. No. That performance, yes, they are wonderful. That literally sums up the problem. Their second team is better than other Premiership first teams because they have got so many good players. They pay so much to retain so many good players that other clubs can't pay to retain. So it is literally an example of the unintentional, but naive financial cheating working. It's not ramming it down anyone's throats. It's the opposite, actually. It's proof of the accusations being founded. And another, I know we can't go on forever, but the whole thing about money doesn't buy you success, money hasn't bought Saracens this success, in very brutal terms, I think you can't buy mental toughness. You can't buy composure under pressure. We've seen many people try and do that and fail. However, Sarries haven't won European Premiership finals 30-40-0. They've won really, some of them have been they've been dominant in some of them in really, really close, tight games. Now, you cannot say that Saracens haven't bought success to an extent, because remove all the players that are there, really, remove all that money, and they might not have won it, and you can't prove they would have done. So you can't say that. And then the whole...
But the best players are the ones that are mentally tough. That's why they're the best players.
Yeah, and, you know, Sarries have produced those guys, but, you know, as we've said before, you know, Jamie George, one of my favourite players and a lovely man. His early years were spent with Skulk Brits, John Smith. You know, Max Malins at fullback has those legends around him. This makes you better. And we can't quantify it, but these are, we now know, unfairly retained players giving an advantage to young players, which makes young players better, which then makes young players way more valuable than they were a year or two ago. So then you would imagine, start seeing those players leave, or the top players leave, because the club can't retain them, except they retained them all. Other clubs, you know, they leave. You know, these players have to leave. You win a title and your best players leave because their value's shot up. You know,
it's difficult, isn't it, when you're comparing what's going on to drugs, cheats and everything like that, because, you know,
it feels worse.
It's still a form of cheating. It's happening, I think it's ongoing in Man City at the moment with main sponsor Etihad.
Is it?
Yeah. You know, it's how that funding from Etihad is coming into Man City. We don't know, but yeah, look, it's the first time this has actually been caught in rugby in this in the UK. I'm trying to think of it. Has it been outside the UK? I can't think of anything.
Well, Melbourne Storm Aussie Rugby League.
Yeah, and they lost all their titles as well. So. I mean, we're probably going to have to round this chat up on Saracens. As I said, we're going to try and speak to Alex Lowe in a little bit. And
he's also dealing with the announcement of the England squad. So
we've got some questions for him.
Yeah, it's fine. So we'll try and speak to him later. But if we can't, doesn't matter. We'll get him another time. It's just, you know, it's
sad times for rugby.
It's a sorry affair, is what it is. But hopefully, at the end of it, you know it. What comes out of it. I mean, what I would like is that I'd like to see, and maybe it's easier to say than it is to achieve, I'm sure it is that every Premiership club's books are entirely open at all times, for inspection by an independent body, not by a body with any investment in sort of the reputation of the game, anything like that, because it can't govern itself. So if you're going to be completely impartial, you cannot be worried about the reputation of the stakeholders. You need to just deal with black and white.
No grey areas.
And one other thing, I was going to say is that, you know, I've watched Saracens win these big games, and I must say I love watching them, and still do, actually. Love watching them play Racing at the weekend. Thought they're magnificent. And I just, the whole thing that the whole money hasn't bought you success and money can't buy you what they produced, I agree with that to an extent in a sporting sense. But I just think in those really tight games, those really, really tight ones that are in the balance, just press pause with 20 minutes to go and just delete, I'm guessing here, delete Vincent Cock, just delete Marrow and delete Will Skelton or delete Liam Williams. Right, I think you just have, you still have a chance of winning, and there's some lots of other amazing players. You have a, you know, there is a smaller chance of you winning, a slimmer chance of you winning. You still might, but you just delete some of the top players in pressure moments. Yes, Saracens created them, but we've talked about the benefit of those young players becoming the players they are, surrounded by legends who perhaps shouldn't have been there. So there is an ongoing legacy. But I just think, it's easy to say money can't buy what they have, but what they have, I feel, is unarguably, you know, enhanced by the presence of top players who we now know really shouldn't be there. So it's very, very difficult. And in all this, you kind of wish the best to all the other clubs. You wish the best to the Sarries players and coaches, because they're just bloody lovely. It's just one of the nicest places to visit. A welcoming, happy, positive, lovely vibe. And you wish the best to Nigel Ray, because I think he's done a colossal amount of good for the English game. And, you know, I kind of weirdly hate all the abuse he gets online. It feels horrible, but there you go. This is sport. People get angry.
Just want to let everyone know that as of next week, we will be on the ITV Guinness Six Nations pod. So make sure that you download that to listen to all things Guinness, all things Six Nations. Most of the squads, have they all been released yet? Certainly the Welsh and English squad.
Who cares, mate? Released. As long as England's done, who cares?
Lewis Rees-Sammet is in the Welsh squad. Let's hope he's all right. He limped off at the weekend after scoring a try.
I look properly sore as well.
Cannot stop scoring. But really suits, you know, if you're a winger, you want to play at Gloucester.
Yeah.
They get the ball into those, you'd rather play at Gloucester than at Bath, wouldn't you?
Yep.
You know, where you get good ball.
Yeah.
You get space. They create space in the midfield, which allows your wingers to have a little bit of room and to use their footwork, use their pace. But yeah, let's hope he's all right. Not that I think he'll get picked for the first game, but I think it's a great experience for him.
Yeah.
There's some quality players that have been picked. There's George North, he's option of the centre. Josh Adams has to play no matter what. They've also got Johnny McNichol, who I think will feature heavily through this campaign. John Holmes is back in as well. So, I mean, the squad is it's a strong squad, as they always are. There's a few injuries. You know, obviously, Reece Patchett is out. Gareth Anscombe is out. But Owen Williams is in from Gloucester. Back fit now.
Yeah, straight back in the squad.
Yeah.
Yeah, good on him.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Dan Bigger is just flying high at the moment for Northampton at 10. Again, had a storming game at the weekend. Really creative, not just being a link man, but actually putting loads of players through holes, looking really attacking, ball in hand, and an absolute threat as a runner as well, which is great to see. Will Rowlands is in the Welsh squad. So Will Griff-John as well. Toby Faletau's back fit. So it's looking good. There are a couple of injury doubts, Liam Williams, as to how fit he's going to be, but centre's the biggest issue we got at Wales. Hadley Parks will start at 12, but it's who he plays alongside. Owen Watkin is injured at the moment. Who knew Nick Tompkins was Welsh?
Yeah, well...
Well, Wayne Pivak did.
Yeah.
And there's rumours that...
It's funny, isn't it, now?
There's rumours...
funny now, isn't it? You just pick.
There's rumours that...
You were the same.
Saracens had contacted Wales to say, look, this guy is... He's got Welsh grandparents. He has aspirations to play international level. I think he's a good player. Still a little bit untested at top level. Doesn't always start for Saracens, but you still have full of confidence that he can do a job when he starts. Really powerful, especially in those tight areas, especially coming back on switch lines, on those out-to-in lines. You know, scores a lot of tries by powering through tackles, wriggling out of tackles. Very sharp, quite pacey as well, but possibly not like the classic outside centre that you used to see. And someone like John Davis, someone like Henry Slade, Jonathan Joseph, that sort of glide around on the outside channels and make those outside breaks and create a lot of space for others. But he's certainly in with a shout, mate. You know, he's a specialist centre. We haven't got many of them fit at the moment. As I said, Owen Watkin is probably out for the first two games. So we will see. We will see.
Yeah. Yep. Good luck to me.
What's the England squad looking like?
And Wilgriff John's in as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Yep. Hey, good he is.
Yep. Yep.
He's got, I think just my opinion is when he arrived at Sale, big strong unit, I say this respectfully, there was a lot of work to do on him becoming an elite prop. And Steve Diamond, Dorian West, Pete Anglesey done a very, very good job. And Mike Forshaw as well. He defends well. He bangs people. But his scrum work's got so much better.
Yeah.
And I think there's every chance he'll do very well for Wales. So
Gareth Davis is back as well. Toulon have allowed him. Not Toulon. Toulon have not allowed him to play. But Wales have allowed Rhys Webb to play, even though he's still in France. But he's re-signed next year for the Ospreys.
My man.
A sign of goodwill by the WIU, but
jacked
you want your best
tan.
Players playing. I don't know.
Jacked and tan.
I mean, he left for Toulon as number one Welsh scrum half. I'm not sure he's going to get straight back in as number one. I think Gareth Davis is possibly. I think Gareth Davis has the shirt at the moment.
I think he's the number one, number nine, Tommy.
Go on then. Hit me with the English squad. Dom Brandt in, eight, captain.
Dom Brandt is out, or not?
Hold on, Dave. Say that again.
Alex Dom Brandt has not been picked for the England squad.
Yeah, he's not been playing well, has he?
Even though Billy Vunipola is injured,
he's not been playing that well at all. Mate. Limited.
Yeah.
Really limited.
Not a
great strike runner. Not great at little blind pass off the left to his centre. Go over.
He hasn't got it.
His trailer support lines aren't great. He's not quick enough. God.
Except the fact that he's
on fire at the moment.
Absolutely outstanding.
Dominating.
Apart from the fact that he's absolutely outstanding, I can see why he hasn't been picked.
Do you think it's because there's been a lot of media attention around it, a lot of pundits,
yep,
a lot of reporters saying Dom Brandt has to be in. And then Eddie Jones has looked at that thinking, well, no one's going to tell me who's in or out. I'm not going to pick him purely on that. Or am I just looking into it too deeply? Am I overthinking it?
I hope you're wrong. Let me say that.
Okay.
I hope you're wrong. I think you might be right.
Well, there has to be a valid reason. I mean, Eddie Jones he's uber bright. There's no doubt about that. He's one of the brightest men
going,
apart from Chris Finch.
One of the brightest men going. I don't understand. I just don't understand why he's in. Don't get it. Not having it. Will Stewart's in. Bath tight head, uncapped. That's, and Tom Dunn. Tom Dunn's been around there before. Will Stewart, I think, has looked great.
Is Devoto in?
Devoto is not in. Devoto is in. I'm just looking at it now. We're getting it live, guys.
Handoff and such pace as well.
He's good. Yeah, he's class.
And like, I didn't realise he was actually that quick.
He's rough as well. He's hard as well.
Because he mostly plays 12, you don't often see 12s with that much room to actually show off their pace, but he is.
So a few guys injured. Obviously, Slade's injured, Vunipola, Francis, Dokuna Singer. So Dan Cole not picked. Harry Williams in.
Okay.
Saw that coming. Jack Singleton is not in. I mean, he's barely played for Sarries, so you can kind of understand that. Tom Dunn's been going pretty hard for Bath. Ben Spencer, not in.
Okay. What scrum halves they gone for then?
Willie Hines and Ben Youngs.
Just two?
Yeah, I think so, from what I'm reading here. Could be wrong, but I'm just getting it through. I mean, Yeah, that's... I don't know.
It's not difficult to bring players in, though, for injury, especially someone
like
Ben Spencer, who would know the calls fresh off the back of
his
appearance in the Rugby World
Just
Cup.
Just as in the World Cup. I'm not think, you know, the... It's a toughie, isn't it? Because it's easy to say he shouldn't be there, but you've got to pick someone else. I don't know. Personally, I still really like Dan Robson, but Eddie Jones doesn't, and he picks the team. So Ben Spencer not picked. Roy McConachy not picked.
Yeah, I can see that.
Again, he's... Hang on a sec, we've got a visitor. Sorry?
What do you do?
We're in private investigators.
Sorry.
Okay, no problem. Good luck to you. Keep going, okay? Drive on.
A dog went missing here a month ago. German Shepherd.
Weird guy. He is fully freaked out. He's walking quick. He didn't like that. Yeah, we had a bloke come to the window. Say, what are you doing then? Anyway, Ted Hill's in. No specialist number eight. So Sam Simmons not in either. To that, I say wow.
Sam
I say
Simmons
wow, wow, wow.
And Dom Brum.
Not in. Okay. Neither in.
Okay.
Sort of wonder how well they would have to play to get in. Anyway,
do you want to win the Six Nations or you just want to turn up?
I find that a bit of an odd one.
Collect your 40 grand, win, lose or draw. It's not that much, by the way.
Alex Mitchell, by the way, the Saints nine is in as sort of an apprentice player.
Oh, yeah, Phil's brother.
That's an interesting one. So. Yeah, Peggy's dad. It's always... You can't pick everyone, but...
No, you can't. You can't.
I must say, I find the fact that Simmons and Dom Brandt aren't there, I find Robson not being there, if he's fit, God, I should have checked that, but...
I mean, what you've got with the England squad, though, which is different to the Welsh squad, mate, you've got far more teams, so there's far more players to pick from and more players that potentially are on form, whilst when you look at the Welsh squad, that, you know, there won't be too many people that disappointed.
No, it's about right, isn't it? Yeah, and Ben Earl's in, and he's been absolutely class. Ted Hill's in, really good for Worcester, been carrying nicely. Ollie Thorley, we know about Ollie Thorley.
One of the hardest runner into contact.
He made a break in the first play of the second half against Toulouse yesterday, and he ran through Marchand, the French hooker, and he literally, Marchand was about 95% ready to start the second half, not quite 100%. Big, strong unit, Marchand. I mean, French international hooker, he would be. And Thorley just ran straight through him. And the point I made in comms was, you've got to be fully on it to stop that mute. Because he goes so hard.
You've got to be brave to be able to want to run that hard into contact, but also your core strength. So from, say, the middle of your thigh to the bottom of your pec, you know, that area has to be super strong because that's where most people try and tackle you. And the ones that are able to burst through the tackles are the ones that got just super strong core there.
Yeah, and so the lock, Alex Moon from Saints, he's in. Friends of Fraser Dingwall's in. That's an interesting one. Uncapped, George Furbank, who's had a great start to the season at the end of last season with Saints. I was out in Lyon, and he scored a lovely try. Brilliant try, line through the middle, inside ball from Bigger. Great outside swerve, pace and all that kind of stuff. Looked great, but until that point, you know, I've loved watching him play, but everyone has a poor game. He had a poor game, or a very iffy game at best up until then. So I read somewhere, I'm not quite sure where, that because Simon Amell, the New England attack coach, was watching him out in Lyon. He came to Lyon to watch and said, you know, he'll be very impressed. And I thought, you must be watching a different game because he's a lovely young player.
Yeah.
And he certainly won't ever be judged on one game, good, bad or indifferent. But this was not the best game he's played this season. It wasn't in the top couple. So he's obviously been picked on, but Jacob Umanga's in as well. Young fly half from Wasps.
I mean, what we will do is we will properly dissect these squads in the next podcast, which is the ITV Guinness Six Nations pod. They have just been released. Wales's was last week, England's today. We'll know a little bit more with injuries and everything. So, as I say, make sure you download the ITV Guinness Six Nations pod, which we will be releasing next week.
Oh, it's going to be amazing, isn't it? It's going to be beaut.
Now, let's have a look at some of the results from the weekend.
We won't do them all, will we?
No, but we have to start with Saracens, okay? Yeah. This was a massive game. This was an emotional game. You could see that the players were on the pitch in a huddle 2 hours before kickoff, just trying to refocus their minds because, you know, what has gone on was just absolutely huge, and it can just overcome you. But, you know, you knew they were going to win that game no matter what, and they needed to, especially after losing Will Skelton to a red card.
Any problems with that, boy?
Absolutely none.
I know you hate red cards and think the game's gone soft.
Absolutely none. He doesn't dip. He doesn't lower his height. He stays quite tall. Doesn't really try to get very low. Contact is made with
also, it's
jaw.
A bit late, and it's like, I just want to whack him anyway. It wasn't even a proper tackle. And he's still my favourite, though, so don't slag him off. Don't slag him off.
But, you know, his discipline, it isn't the greatest at all. But, I mean, it was such a massive start from Saracens as well. You know, come firing out the blocks. And then Owen Farrell throws an intercept after an up and under, which ends up bouncing, I think, into Racine's hands, and they go through. But you just thought Saracens was going to put 50 on him to start with.
But you know when Farrell makes those mistakes, and they're key mistakes, doesn't change the way he plays at all.
Doesn't affect him, does it?
He's nails, isn't he?
It doesn't affect
him. He's great. What a legend.
Yeah.
It's like absolutely didn't change anything he did. And he got battered after he chucked a pass and got smashed by, was it LaRue?
I'm not sure, but he got back up within about 10 seconds and threw another pass then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His nails.
He was.
Absolutely nails. He's hilarious.
But yeah, look, they I suppose, dominate the possession, territory. I really thought it was a bit of a shot to nothing. You could hear that in the commentary from the boys. But Brad Barrett's kick, I mean, the kick was perfect because it bounces. If that kick doesn't bounce, Saracens don't score, but it does bounce. Really good interlinking play. Duncan Taylor, I thought, was very good,
very good
defensively.
Yeah.
He's not in a Scottish squad because of he can't get released early.
So he's playing 6 days before the first test.
Yes.
It's madness, isn't it?
It's difficult to prepare for that. But if you're a starter, you're in that squad, I'm afraid.
Surely they can give him a week off. They got 200 players.
Yeah. Hugh Jones is back on form. They've got Scott Johnson as well.
Hugh Jones does look good.
Yeah.
Does look really good.
Back scoring tries. So
good looking unit as well. I did a bit of corporate with him. He walked in and I was like, oh God.
He's just a great strike runner, mate.
God,
as well.
I don't want this guy around me on a night out. I don't want him anywhere near me.
With huge amount of pace.
I want Alan Jacobson near me, not him.
But Vakatawa, I know that you're a little bit...
You don't rate him, do you?
Who doesn't rate him, mate?
You think he's overrated, don't you?
Who does not rate him?
You think he's arrogant?
No, I think he is phenomenal, mate. I think
you think he's lazy?
He's the best player in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
I think so. The balance that he runs...
It's outrageous.
Mate, he's fast, but it's just being able to be that big and that powerful, but also being able to change direction and not lose any speed.
Yeah.
And keep your balance.
Yeah.
Because it's not as easy as you think. Like, some people are natural at it, others aren't. You look at, say, Lee Halfpenny, when he steps, you know, he slows his whole body down, then he steps, and then he goes again. Whilst you watch Vakatawa, he just goes, steps, and he still maintains that pace and that power. So he doesn't lose any momentum. And a difficult man to stop.
He's just painfully difficult to stop and just an absolute treat to watch.
But you think, I just spoke about it. You think when Owen Farrell throws an intercept, you think, right. It's not going to be Saracen's day. Will Skelton gets a red card. It's not that day, but they grind out a win.
So I was watching it on my phone at the Stade Ernest Vallon before the Toulouse-Gloucester game, and I was watching it on and off with Scott Spedding, and he goes, oh, God, that's not great for Saris or whatever, and I said, they'll win that. They'll definitely beat Racing.
A little bit of luck. You know, the knock-on from Elliot Daly when the ball goes up in the air, Saracens end up scoring off that. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's such a small element. That's such a small knock. That's fingertips. They are missed 5-6 times through a game. So you can't look back at that and think, oh, Saracens were lucky. Things like that go unnoticed all the time. You know, had Saracens not scored, no one ever would have picked that up at all.
Yeah. And I think we'll jump
it's
around
a knock
a bit,
off the head as well.
But as
it?
For the other main Sunday fixture, Toulouse-Gloucester. Gloucester went out there without Cipriani, without Fraser Balmain. So you go out there without your top fly half and your top tight head. They were struggling up front. From the very start, really, I thought the first 20 minutes Toulouse shocked Gloucester with basically how hard they hit them. They were so physical. And we made the point in comms, and some of you listening to this may have watched it on BT. And it's easy to talk about, you know, Untermack and Tomáš Ramos, who I'm still not quite sure about him, but Antoine Dupont at nine was just outrageously good. Like, it was like watching Yashvili again, who, by the way, was smoking fags and drinking wine 15 minutes before kickoff, commentating on French TV. What a legend. He was there. It's like watching him again. It was just absolutely knows what to do all the time. Peter Arki in the midfield was fab. Sofiane Guitoun was great. They're just wonderful players everywhere. But I tell you what, that is not what Toulouse are about. It's not what they're about. They are power. They've got so much power. Joe Tacori was a beast. Charlie Famuina was a beast. These guys were fantastic. And Marchand was great. And Castets, the loosehead, he's keeping Cyril Bailly, who's a seasoned international, on the bench. They have got power everywhere. Reinhard Elstad in the back row. Jerome Kano, Cross will be in the French starting team, they think. It's just like... And Gloucester just got minced a bit, to be honest. They stuck in it really well. Physically, they just got minced up a bit. And then in the scrum just got properly tuned. And there's just not a huge amount you can do about that. But Toulouse looked good enough to win it.
Yeah.
But Charlie Famuina, the All Black, went off. He hurt his knee and went off. Dorian Aldeguerri, the tight head, also very good, strong guy, came on, was dicking around. And I forget who he grabbed. It might have been Joe Simpson, just trying to chuck him on the floor, just being a bit of a nose. Basically pulled him back into his own knee, hyperextended his knee and went off in absolute agony. So they may have lost their two top tight heads. And I think they struggle to win Europe without their two top tight heads. That's how much emphasis they put on their power game. But they were very impressive.
Northampton come back against Lyon.
I was there, wasn't I?
Again, Dan Biggar had a great game, I thought. When they get into that set-up position that we see so many teams do now, where you put that pass behind a forward to another back, I think when Northampton get it right, they're as good as any team. And we saw that. We saw it. Dan Biggar, I think, hitting Hutchinson, who comes flying through. Probably should have given it first time, but they end up scoring from it anyway. Kobus Reinhardt again shows us that he's probably the quickest thing around at the moment, with just unbelievable pace. Maybe gets away with it by tripping up. I can't remember who it was, one of the Lyon players running back. There is connection made with the heel of his shoe and he falls over. But he just looks super quick, and it was a real decent win by Northampton in the end. And you know, it's a tough ask for them to go to Exeter, but I can't see any reason why they could not go there and win with the style they're playing at the moment. They found a style that suits. I think it's led by Tamana Harrison up front, Courtney Laws as well.
Those two are so good at the moment.
The front row, I think, is really good. The scrum's good. So
yeah, Owen Franks has made a big difference, yeah. It seems, in the short term, because their scrum has been struggling a bit. It was absolutely rock solid. Xavier Chocky's Lyon loose had lots of play for Toulon when they were at their best, and a few France caps, and he's big and he's got a big rep, but I think he's actually, being frank, he's not the best. Pretty ill-disciplined, but Owen Franks had absolutely no bother with Chocky whatsoever, and I thought that's looks like a, hopefully that's a really good signing for that Saints front five.
I just think the biggest difference, I think, in Northampton is Dan Biggar and the confidence he's playing with at the moment.
Yeah.
I just think he's running the show. I know I spoke about it early on, but he's no more just a 10 that is linking with forwards, linking with backs. He's actually a running threat, putting inside balls. You know, he's actually challenging the line, and that just creates so much space for others outside him. He's gone into the Six Nations campaign now full of confidence, rightly so. Hope he doesn't get injured, and if he plays well, Wales will play well.
Yeah, it was a pleasing performance to watch from Northampton. Haven't seen yet, because it's still Monday morning here and I didn't get back from Toulouse till midnight, but last night. But Quinns against Clermont. Now, I just spoke to a match official out in Toulouse, and I said, did you see the Clermont game at Quinns? And he said, yeah. I said, did Clermont cheat in the scrums towards the end to get Slimani back on? He went, yeah, flat out cheated.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. And I saw Yashvili and said, that was a Clermont game. And he was like, yeah, they cheated. I was like, Clermont cheat? Did Clermont cheat? Yeah. I said, oh, God, that's not great. And he goes, yeah, but I'm sorry. You can't take any criticism from Quinns for cheating. And laughed and walked off. as in Bloodgate. I was like, I think we're still allowed to criticise Clermont for cheating.
But, yeah, they did, mate. It was really obvious. You could see Paul Gostard Paul Gustard, sorry. Just
ridiculous, mate. This day and age, they should, you know, but
just fuming.
You can't tell someone they're not hurt. It's, you know, you just trust teams not to do that.
When you were mentioning Dom Brandt earlier, had another good game, and it was his pass. It was a blind pass off the hip to Luke Northmore, who scores a try.
He's looking good. Northmore looks well.
Yeah. I tell you, he looked really well. I was at the Cardiff Blues Calvisano game at the weekend. I took the kids. I'm just a great guy.
Great day out for them. Bored senseless.
Well, they had iPads, sweets, and they ran on the pitch after.
Yeah, a couple of cans of cider.
Had loads of photos.
20 B&H. Yeah.
And Gareth Llewellyn's son. Gareth Llewellyn's second
Clue.
Row.
Clue.
Yeah. His son came off the bench and played really well. Had a couple of line breaks. Second row, his father was, and he's got the... Possibly not as tall as his dad, but he's big.
Yeah.
And looked good. I thought.
Great, yeah. I've been reading that he looks sharp, actually. That's very nice. That's good
but
stuff.
If we have a look at the quarterfinals, Big Dave, it starts off with Leinster versus Saracens.
There's only one winner there. Rugby Union. that's brutal, isn't
it? That's the heavyweights.
I actually think Leinster are a better team, but we all know that Sarries can go there and win. We also know that Leinster love home quarterfinals and semis on the way to winning European Cups.
I just think this could be a bit of a... Saracens could want it more because of everything that's gone on, because of being relegated, because of all the bad negative press that's gone around with it. It's a bit of a...
Well, they need it more.
It's a bit of a, this will galvanise us, this will motivate us. I'm picking Saracens to win.
Are you?
One. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
I mean, we're obviously impartial, but I would rather love Sarries to win that, but cause I think it's just great to talk about. But I think Leinster will win that.
Claremont, Racing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, when speaking of Sarries, when Claremont and Scott Spedding sort of told me from behind the scenes that the boss at Claremont was just absolutely obsessed with Saracens. Saracens, they're Saracens that, and they drew them in the pool and they beat them at Marcel Michelin, and then they went, remember it was cancelled and replayed on the Monday or whatever it was, and absolutely battered Sarries. And they finally did it and then lost at home to Racing in the quarter final. And it was like, God, if only we'd been obsessed with Racing, we might have won that.
Yeah.
Claremont Racing. I actually, having watched Claremont, when they're at their best, they just roll through teams. I don't think they're at their best. And I know Racing lost to Sarries at the weekend and they weren't brilliant for the whole game, only sort of second quarter, really. And they didn't really feature in the second half. But I actually think Racing might go there and do a job.
It did help that Racing lost a player with 10 minutes to go, which evened it out.
Bernard Leroux. It definitely helped. But I reckon Racing do that. Next.
Toulouse, Ulster. Now, Ulster beat Bath the weekend. They've gone about this really quietly. They haven't got a home draw, but Will Addison was just brilliant
wasn't
the weekend. That Billy Burns ends up creating that try, but it's the show and go, and it's the one-handed offload, I think, to Balakoon that is just...
It's just beautiful.
It's
a show. It's the dummy. It's just beautiful.
And then he gets on the end of another try. Another try then, 5-10 minutes later. John Cooney's on great form. Coetzee is phenomenal. Ian Henderson, McCluskey, Stockdale. You know, it's... I wouldn't...
McCluskey not pick the Ireland squad.
Yeah, I wouldn't count them out. I mean, I think if Ulster had to lose home, I'd be saying... Ulster win, definitely.
Yeah,
I'm going to go to lose.
I'm going to say, ridiculous statement. If Charlie Fanmarina's fit and his knee's all right, Toulouse win that quarter final. If he's not fit, if they don't have one of their Aldeguerri or Fanmarina starting, I think Ulster have got actually a shot of winning out there, because Toulouse were fab in patches, but they third quarter of that game they were useless. Half an hour that second half, they were chucking balls. Chucking double miss passes when they didn't need to, looping balls into touch. They were rubbish, yet they can produce something wonderful.
I just think the Toulouse power at home will be the difference.
Yep. Next.
Last one we have, Exeter versus Northampton.
You say Saints, don't you?
I don't say Saints.
You do, you said it earlier.
But I said they're going there with a genuine chance to win. Now, you wouldn't have said that last year, probably at the start of the season. But after the way they've played... qualifying in seventh position and the style of play with Dan Big, with Reinhardt, with the whole of the pack as well, Wood.
Tom Wood's playing brilliant.
He's brilliant, isn't he? Yeah.
Timon Harrison,
Courtney Laws.
Mikey Hayward. Yeah. Brilliant, Leon.
I just think it's going to be a lot closer than we think, because you look at that, Exeter, Northampton, Exeter at home, you just think Exeter all day long. But I am going Exeter, but I just don't think it'll be that.
I don't think Exeter all day long.
I think it'll be
Exeter
that close.
Are the best team in
England. I think
England,
it'll be close.
But I think it'll be close, but I do think I think the same as you. Basically, I'm the same as you, yeah?
Yeah.
But Saints could do that.
Just a quick mention about the Balakoon offload. It's brilliant. He's been so good for Ulster these last...
Will Addison.
No, Balakoon.
Balakoon, yeah.
On the wing. Been so good defensively and attack as well. Really, really underrated, I think.
Yeah.
Because one of Ulster's best players.
Well, he was an unsung hero until now. You've now made him a sung hero. He's a well-sung hero.
Captain.
So I remember people used to did an interview once and they were like, oh, Richard Hill, you know, back in England when we were at Sarries, Richard Hill, unsung hero. I was like, unsung hero? He's got 70 caps and a World Cup. How's that unsung?
Yeah.
He's widely regarded as one of the best players on the planet. That's not unsung. He just doesn't do loads of press.
Shane Williams was sort of an unsung hero.
Oh, yeah. The Welsh Wizard. Yeah. Nicknamed the Welsh Wizard. Tons of caps. Yeah, unsung.
Jason Robinson was unsung, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Just like Dan Carter. No one knew how good he was until he was playing. Oh, that's right.
Before we wrap up this extended extra long pod.
Special pod, flats, yeah.
I have to mention a player that I played with years and years ago in Middlesex, a guy called Kevin Fisher. He was the number 10.
Yep.
I was in the centre with Lewis Gunn. Some really unfortunate news. He's got a brain tumour and they're doing a massive fundraiser for him this weekend at Cobham Rugby Club. Unfortunately, I can't make it, but I'm trying to get some stuff down there, some Welsh stuff signed. Hopefully, it can raise some money in a raffle in the auction. Brilliant player. Played for Middlesex for a few years. You were playing it with Kent. I'm sure I faced you a couple of times in Roslyn Park.
Smashed you boys.
It was a great squad there. Declan Danaher, he was playing there, back row, still at London Irish now. Some brilliant players there. So,
yeah.
Just such sad news.
Let's hope they raise a ton of money. Yeah. If anybody wants to go down there or send anything, get into it. Help out.
Okay, there we are.
Well done, boy. Oh, yeah, and we said we were going to speak to Alex Lowe, but he is actually flat out with the England squad announcement, so we're actually going to get him when we're not so rushed. We'll speak to him next week or the week after.
Yeah, listen to us next week on the ITV Guinness Six Nations pod, all right?
Yeah, ta-ra.